Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we open our show with updates on a devastating earthquake that has struck Nepal, causing destruction in several nations, and what you can do to help survivors as part of a worldwide relief effort to save lives. Here in California, a new bill proposes to replace Father Junipero Serra's statue in the nation's capital, and we'll tell you who's proposed to be honored instead. The U.S. Supreme Court has weighed in on a gas price-fixing scheme that dates back to the energy crisis in California involving Enron. We'll have details and a shocking story on how California regulators ignored their responsibility to protect ratepayers. On our agricultural report, learn about a California raisin farmer's battle to stop an agricultural trade group from forcing him to fallow part of his land to keep crop prices up. Another terrorist arrest has been made locally, and we'll have details. We'll also tell you about a major telecommunications merger that has been halted by the FCC. Plus, learn about a San Diego State professor who has won a major poetry prize. Here in East County, a trespass call ended in death in Ramona. La Mesa will be removing roundabouts intended to improve traffic safety, but that backfired. And an El Cajon mother is issuing a tearful plea for the return of her baby's ashes, which were stolen. Our newsmaker interview today is with Joel Gossett from the Circle Players, East County's newest theatrical group. He'll be talking about their upcoming production, Cafe Murder. We'll have some Arbor Day tips for you and an update on a Valley Fever conference held in San Diego. You'll also learn some amazing stories of heroism by several California wildlife officers who have received California's Medal of Honor, the highest award given in our state for saving lives. A new bill in Sacramento would register all drivers to vote in an increase to boost voter turnout, and we'll have details. Today, we'll also be replaying our bookshelf interview with Diana Lindsay, an author and publisher of outdoor books based right here in East County. And then on Green Scene, hear about some new trails coming to our region, learn about efforts to save honeybees, and get tips for preventing fires caused by Mylar balloons this Cinco de Mayo weekend. We'll also have news about a widespread recall of motorcycles from Harley-Davidson, so be sure to listen up before you rev up and hit the road. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The death toll is rising from a devastating earthquake that struck Nepal on Saturday, April 25th, killing over 3,700 people in Nepal, India, Bangladesh, and the Tibetan region of China. The quake measured 7.8 on the Richter scale, stronger than the 1906 San Francisco quake and the strongest to hit Nepal in more than 80 years. An avalanche on Mount Everest killed at least 18 mountain climbers and Sherpas, including Google executive Dan Fridenberg, whose father and stepmother live in Carlsbad in San Diego's North County. His death was reported on Instagram by his sister. Cultural resources have also been devastated, particularly in Kathmandu Valley, including the landmark Darahara Tower, which collapsed. Multiple temples have also been damaged or destroyed. Over 7,000 people were injured in the quake. The United Nations reports that over 1 million children need humanitarian aid. Major aftershocks, some as strong as major quakes themselves, continue to rock the region. Many people are sleeping outdoors, fearful to go inside. And amid the massive damage, the risk of disease, such as from contaminated water, could claim even more lives. A massive global relief effort has been launched, including aid from the U.S. USAID is deploying a disaster assistance response team to the region and providing over $1 million in emergency aid as it assesses the humanitarian needs. An urban search and rescue team has also been deployed. An official arm of the U.S. government, USAID at USAID.gov, also has a list of charitable groups accepting donations for the Nepal quake survivors. The groups listed have been screened and must be partners of USAID and have high marks from watchdog groups. And again, that site is USAID.gov/Nepal-earthquake. Google and Facebook have launched tools to help find people missing after the quake in Nepal. Google's Person Finder uses social media sites to help you search for people who may be lost or found in the quake area. Anyone can contribute to these records, from friends and family to first responders or relief groups. Facebook has launched its Safety Check tool, which many are using to check on friends or family in their network. The tool automatically sends a notification to anybody whose GPS data or profile shows that they're in the region, asking them to update their Safety Check status. Friends in your network can update the feature if the person in the disaster area can't do so themselves. Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg posted, "When disasters happen, people need to know their loved ones are safe. It's moments like this that being able to connect really matters." For up-to-date information, you can visit the U.S. Embassy's website and Facebook page, and also to learn more about USAID's assistance, you can visit usaid.gov/Nepal. For help regarding U.S. citizens who are in Nepal, you can contact the U.S. State Department, which has set up a special phone line at 1-888-407-4747. Again, that's 1-888-407-4747. U.S. citizens who are in Nepal and need help can contact the U.S. Embassy in Kathmandu. Travelers in Nepal or to any foreign country are advised to notify the U.S. government before you go by entering your information online at the State Department's website and enrolling in the Smart Traveler Enrollment Program to receive updates should an emergency happen where you are traveling. Despite the immense damage in Nepal, the Nepali Times tweeted, "Our mountains and temples have been pulverized, but Nepal will rise again." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
An effort to remove a statue of Father Junipero Serra from the U.S. Capitol and replace it with a statue of Sally Ride, the first American woman astronaut, cleared a major legislative hurdle on Monday. The state Senate approved the measure, which must be approved next by the Assembly and signed by Governor Brown before it becomes law. Ride, a La Jolla resident, became the first U.S. woman in space when she flew aboard the Space Shuttle Challenger in 1983. Trained as a physicist at Stanford, after her career at NASA, she established Sally Ride Science, a local nonprofit foundation promoting science and technology to middle school-age girls. Each state is allowed to display two statues in the U.S. Capitol. California has President Ronald Reagan's statue as well as Sarah's. Supporters of replacing Sarah's statue with Ride's likeness say it's time to honor a woman. Ride would also be the first acknowledged gay or lesbian individual to be recognized with a statue in the nation's capital. Sarah established the missions in California and is under consideration for sainthood for spreading Christianity in the region during the 18th century, the Vatican has announced. But Sarah's canonization is opposed by Native Americans who cite his brutal treatment of Native people and the near extermination of some cultures. The measure is authored by Senator Ricardo Lara and co-authored by Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins of San Diego, both Democrats. It passed the state Senate by a 22-10 vote, with local legislators split down party lines, Democrats in favor, Republicans against. Ride's family is setting up a foundation to raise money to cover costs of creating and shipping the new statue, as well as returning Sarah's. It is not yet determined where the Sarah statue would be placed, though San Diego, home of the first mission in the system established by the Spanish missionaries, is on the short list of possibilities. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Remember the Enron scandal? Now the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that energy companies accused of illegal manipulation of natural gas prices during California's energy crisis 10 years ago can be sued under the state's antitrust laws. So why did California drop its investigation at the time? American Electric Power Company, Duke Energy, and other natural gas traders had argued that federal law would preempt claims under state law. But by a 7-2 vote, the Supreme Court justices at the nation's highest court ruled against the gas traders. A lower court had ruled for the gas traders, but the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals overturned that ruling and said companies should face price-fixing claims. The Supreme Court agreed, with Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Antonin Scalia dissenting in the case of Oniok versus Learjet. Learjet was among the companies and consumers that had filed suit over soaring gas prices. Others included a Kansas school district, a brewery in Colorado, and a Missouri hospital, and more. According to the Topeka Capital Journal, the plaintiffs alleged that OneOK and other companies supplied artificially high prices to publications that printed price data, causing readers to pay artificially high rates for subsequent transactions, according to the court documents. The allegations relate to the 2001 energy crisis, the one that caused the blackouts in California and led to the topple of Enron. An article in the San Diego Reader written by Don Bowder notes that the irony is that the California Public Utilities Commission had a major investigation of such fraud early in this century. Loretta Lynch, who was president of the PUC before she was replaced by Michael Peavy, asks, the central question is, where is California? The state dropped this gas fraud investigation once Peavy was at the helm. Peavy, a former PG&E top executive, is currently under state and federal investigations for corruption allegations, including evidence that he engaged in illegal communications with the companies he was supposed to regulate, brokered secret deals for utility companies, and stuck ratepayers for the costs. According to the Reader, Lynch says the state of California was in the back room having made a deal to not take any action on the natural pricing manipulation and fraud for which we found substantial evidence during the time I was at the CPUC, she says. The former chair of the CPUC concludes California was AWOL in fighting against fraud, manipulation, and in fighting for its gas consumers. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they've seen Harry.
This is Leon Thompson for East County Magazine. Should a government-backed board be able to seize part of a farmer's crops in order to keep supplies down and prices up? That's the issue that the United States Supreme Court is supposed to decide. The case was filed by a California raisin farmer who wants to strike down actions by the California Raisin Board taken under a Depression-era law. The Agricultural Marketing Agreement Act of 1937 allowed farmers to join cooperative boards to stabilize prices for their products at a time when agricultural crop prices had plummeted. It worked by farmers agreeing to not plant a portion of their land or put part of their crop into a pool to be sold overseas. But a Fresno raisin farmer refused to participate in this reserve pool, instead selling raisins on his own. He was fined $695,000 for his defiance and promptly filed suit. The Los Angeles Times reports that in arguments before the high court, the majority seems ready to agree that the law violates the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution, which prohibits taking a private property for public use without just compensation. Over 1,600 raisin farmers from California, including SunMade, an industry giant, joined the USDA to defend the program, claiming the farmer who files suit is seeking a free ride at the expense of others, benefiting from higher prices thanks to those who did participate. The high court has previously weighed in on another aspect of government control over farm products. In 2005, the justices ruled that forcing farmers to pay for generic marketing campaigns was legal. Those included I Heard It Through the Grapevine, a commercial that featured the now famous Dancing California Raisins.
Yet another terrorist suspect has been arrested in San Diego, Mohammed Saeed Kodamati, who was arrested on Thursday. He is accused of making false statements denying involvement in terrorist plots. Born in Syria, Kodamati became a naturalized U.S. citizen in 2008 and traveled to Turkey and Syria. After returning to San Diego in March, he was questioned by border agents and then arrested by the FBI and the San Diego Joint Terrorism Task Force agents. Federal authorities contend that he lied when he denied being involved in fighting, being involved with al-Nusra, firing a weapon, working at a Sharia law court, and knowing members of the Islamic State, also known as ISIL or ISIS. According to FBI Special Agent Daryl Foxworth, Kodamati's arrest was not related to the arrest last week of Somali men in San Diego who were trying to travel to Syria to join ISIL. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Marilyn Chin, a Chinese-American poet and professor at San Diego State University's Master of Fine Arts program, has received the Annisfield Wolf Book Award for her latest poetry volume titled Hard Love Province. Past winners of the prestigious National Poetry Prize have included Toni Morrison, Martin Luther King Jr., and Langston Hughes. The award was established in 1935 by poet and philanthropist Edith Annisfeld in honor of her father, John Annisfeld, and husband, Eugene Wolfe, to honor her family's passion for social justice. It's the only American Book Prize for works that address racism and diversity, SDSU reports. Chin's poetry combines a multitude of cultures. Rita Dove, an Annisfeld Wolfe juror and Pulitzer Prize winner for poetry, said of Chin's work, "In these sad and beautiful poems, a withering portrayal of our global society emerges. from Buddha to Allah, Mongols to Beseda Boys, Humvee to Warhorse Dachau, to Westar Fur, Irrawaddy River to San Diego. Chin is among the most celebrated living poets. Her honors include fellowships from United Artists Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation, as well as a Radcliffe Institute Fellowship at Harvard, a Fulbright Fellowship to Taiwan, two awards from the National Endowment for the Arts, and five Pushcart Prizes. This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Federal regulators have decided that a merger proposed between the nation's two largest cable companies would not be a marriage made in heaven. On Friday, Comcast announced that it has officially dropped its effort to acquire its chief rival, Time Warner Cable. Not even an army of over 100 lobbyists could convince federal regulators to approve the deal, The Hill reports, nor could millions of dollars in donations to congressional candidates and President Obama's campaign win the support the companies sought. The Stop Mega Comcast Coalition issued this statement on the announcement. This outcome is the direct result of the efforts of hundreds of thousands of citizens, members of Congress, community leaders nationwide, as well as dozens of businesses and organizations who have advocated tirelessly in defense of a competitive media marketplace. The FCC has been aggressive in recent years in halting mega mergers, including forcing T-Mobile and Sprint to halt their planned merger last year. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler concluded that the decision will give consumers greater choice, adding, "Today, an online video market is emerging that offers new business models and greater consumer choice. The proposed merger would have posed an unacceptable risk to competition and innovation." Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. A trespass call ended in death in Ramona on Saturday afternoon. Sheriff's deputies responded to the trespass report at a home in the 600 block of D Street in Ramona, where they found a 57-year-old man who appeared agitated, according to deputies. Lieutenant John Marion with the sheriff's homicide detail reports that as deputies tried to check the man for weapons, he pulled away from them and pulled a gun from his waistband. The man then shot himself in the head, Lieutenant Marion said. The injured man was taken via air ambulance to a local hospital, where he later died. An autopsy is pending. None of the deputies discharged their firearms, and the deputies were not injured.
Back in December 2013, the city of La Mesa installed roundabouts to slow down speeders at two locations on Harbison Avenue at the Watson Way and Annapolis Avenue junctions. But the roundabouts caused problems of their own. Instead of slowing down, speeders smashed into parked cars and wound up on residents' lawns. Residents told the city council at a meeting last month and asked that the roundabouts be removed. The speed limit on Harbison is 30 miles per hour. Before the roundabouts were added, average maximum speeds were 60 and 70 miles an hour at the two locations. That did decrease slightly to 50 and 60 after the roundabouts were built. Still far in excess of the legal limit, but with property damage to boot as drivers swerve to avoid roundabouts, especially at night, the UT San Diego reports. For now, the city will restore the intersections to how they were before the roundabouts were added. City staff will study the situation to propose alternative ways to get motorists to slow down. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
An El Cajon mother is heartbroken after thieves stole her baby daughter's cremated ashes. Lori Paulsrock was staying temporarily with her fiancé at a campsite in El Cajon while waiting to move into their new place next week, 10 News reports. She had belongings in a storage unit, including her wedding dress and a laundry basket full of clothes. Beneath those clothes, she had hidden a hand-decorated white box with her daughter's ashes inside. The tearful mother issued a plea on Channel 10 News asking the thief to please not throw away the ashes of her daughter, Alani Nicole, a premature baby who died in 2003. The box has Alani's name on it, as well as the crematorium's phone number. Anyone who finds the box is asked to please turn it in to a police station, a fire station, a library, or some other place where Paulsrock can claim the box and its precious contents. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is Joel Gossett, and Joel is the artistic director of the brand new Circle Players in El Cajon, and he's here today to talk about their upcoming production called Cafe Murder, a dinner murder mystery. Joel, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Miriam.
So, tell us about Cafe Murder. First of all, when and where is the production?
Well, Cafe Murder will be held at Richardson Hall in El Cajon. It's on Farragut Circle, 551 Farragut Circle. It's across the street from the Presbyterian Church that's in the middle of the circle. And it's going to be produced on May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, with Friday and Saturday nights being at 7 p.m. and the Sunday, the 3rd, being at 2 p.m.
Give us a little sneak preview of what Cafe Murder will be like for the guests who attend.
Well, as guests arrive, they'll be escorted to their table in Cafe Murder. They will be seated at the table either in groups that they've chosen or with complete strangers, and that's part of the fun of it is fellowshipping yeah. with other theater goers. Mm-hmm. They'll be served a dinner, a full meal. Even the Sunday will be the full meal. And as they're finishing up the dinner, a party arrives late. It's Rosemary St. John, who is celebrating her birthday, and her four sisters arrive. And there's some conflict because they have arrived late for the dinner. Mm-hmm. And the audience then witnesses the interaction between the five sisters and the staff of Cafe Murder. And in amongst that, a crime is committed.
And so the audience becomes the witnesses to the murder?
In some respects, they don't actually see what happens, mm-hmm. but they might hear what happens.
So they have evidence of the crime.
They have evidence of the crime, and a detective arrives and presents some more evidence. And then it's realized that the detective herself has had some dealings with the victim.
Uh-oh.
And might not be objective as she should be. So therefore,
the plot thickens.
The plot does thicken. Therefore, the only witnesses, the only objective investigators to this crime are the audience themselves. And at this point, the audience has the opportunity to question all of the suspects.
There you go. You can channel your inner detective listeners if you come and help solve the crime.
Right. So the audience members will get a chance to ask three questions of each of the suspects. The suspects will rotate between the tables. They'll have 3 minutes to ask three questions. And at the end of that, the audience members get to vote on who they think committed the crime.
Marvelous. And I understand there's a prize for the winner, or at least a drawing.
There will be a drawing of those who guessed correctly, and then those names will be drawn out of a hat, and they will win a prize.
Very good. And we should add the tagline for Cafe Murder is where everyone has a motive and everyone is a suspect.
I think by the end of the audience seeing Rosemary St. John, they themselves would have a motive.
Okay, well, I'm certainly looking forward to learning more about that. Now, Circle Players is a brand new theater group here in East County. Joel, can you give us a little background about how that all came about and what the Circle Players are all about?
Why, certainly. Through the Presbyterian Church of El Cajon, we have a program called Neighbor to Neighbor. It's where we outreach to the community to provide resources to the community. Mm-hmm. We help out a group called Reality Changers, which is helping young people get into college.
Very good.
We have, in partnership with St. Albans Church, a community garden where people can actually grow in our garden plots.
I've seen that. I actually came out and covered the grand opening of that. That was a wonderful project.
And we have other projects, city beautification projects and things like that. So the Circle Players was a dream of mine, and I proposed it, and we mm-hmm. got approval. And so this is a community theater outreach where it is actually members of the community that are putting on this play.
Yeah, where do you get the players from? Are they church members or other members in the broader community?
It's mostly members of the broader community. I don't exclude church members from auditioning. Mm-hmm. So it's a good mix. And this is an opportunity for not only actors, but technicians, lighting technicians, sound technicians, others that want to practice their stagecraft.
Good point. Great place to get some experience.
Absolutely. And of course, a great outreach for the community members who love watching plays.
Absolutely. I'm certainly looking forward to that. In the future, what other kinds of productions do you plan to do? Will there be more murder mysteries? Will there be other kinds of dramas or comedies? What can we expect?
We're projecting and planning, and we're just in the planning stages right now, to have two other productions this year. One, a staged reading of a drama, so it won't be acted out. It's where the audience will have to use their imagination of what's going on. There will be a narrator, but it is a drama, some light comedy in it, but a drama. And then in the fall, perhaps another murder mystery, and one that I'm looking at has a Western theme.
Ooh.
Where the audience will be transported, or the audience will be attending a dude ranch, and the audience members will be encouraged to dress as if they are at a dude ranch.
Well, that sounds like fun, and it sounds like something that would be pretty popular out here in East County.
I'm sure everybody has Western something background that they could wear.
You think a cowboy hat or some boots tucked away in the closet there?
Absolutely.
Very good. Now, where can people get more information about tickets or get reservations?
Well, for more information or for tickets, they can call area code 619-442-2583. And that's the main number to our church, and they will take care of it themselves or refer you to someone else. Or you can email to firstpresec, and I'll spell that, firstpresec, at sbcglobal.net.
And listeners, if you didn't catch all of that, don't worry. You can just go to eastcountymagazine.org and click on our calendar or our arts and music section, and we will also have all that information there for you. We have been speaking with Joel Gossett, the artistic director of the brand new Circle Players in El Cajon, about their upcoming production May 1st through 3rd of Cafe Murder. Joel, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you very much.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
With Arbor Day fast approaching, San Diego Gas and Electric Company is reminding customers and landscapers to plant the right tree in the right place this Arbor Day. When selecting trees, customers and landscapers are encouraged to keep in mind the future growth of the tree and note that as trees grow to mature heights, they can interfere with overhead power lines and in some cases underground utility lines. Before planting a new tree and to ensure public safety, SDG&E recommends these actions. Take the time to properly select a tree that is not only aesthetically pleasing, but is safe to plant in your area. Keep water conservation in mind and consider planting drought-tolerant trees and vegetation on your property. Take the time to choose the planting site as carefully as you chose the tree. Remember to always plant the right tree in the right place for the best chance of success. Call Underground Service Alert at 811 to mark out underground utility lines 2 days before digging. With just one call, you can have your underground cable, water, and energy lines marked out for free. Failing to do this could result in serious injury or death. Don't plant shrubs directly in front of utility boxes, pad-mounted box transformers. Allow room for doors to swing open when shrubs are fully grown. The law requires that 8 feet in front of and 2 feet on the other three sides of the transformer must be clear of vegetation. Contact your city arborist, parks department, or public works department to find out if your city has guidelines for planting trees and whether a permit is required for planting trees on parkways or public areas. SDG&E is participating in several Arbor Day events around the county, including Santee Arbor Day at Walker Preserve here in East County on Friday, May 8th. Additionally, as part of SDG&E's Right Tree, Right Place program, customers may be eligible for a free tree removal and replacement tree for incompatible trees that are currently being pruned under the electrical high-voltage lines. Customers can call 800-411-SDGE or visit sdge.com/safety to learn more about the Right Tree, Right Place program. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
This is Ed Barreno with the Health Report. The 59th annual meeting of the Kochi Study Group met on April 10th at UCSD in La Jolla. The group is an academic network of scientists, physicians, and health activists that are dedicated to researching valley fever, a potentially lethal illness spread by inhalation of fungal spores from soil across much of the Southwest. The Centers for Disease Control recently declared an epidemic of the illness across much of the Southwest. At the conference in San Diego, national and regional experts presented 25 papers and 13 poster displays to an audience of about 160. Subjects included the spread of valley fever to Washington State and northern Arizona, the dual challenge of asthma and valley fever, steroid treatment for Kochi meningitis, skin test screening on California inmates, and valley fever's effect on solar farm workers and canines. By far, one of the most interesting and disturbing reports dealt with the solar industry. Gail Sondermeyer, an epidemiologist at the California Department of Public Health, discussed 44 valley fever cases among equipment operators, laborers, and other personnel during the 2011 to 2014 construction of two solar farms in San Luis Obispo County. Interestingly, one-third of the cases developed in employees not involved with dust-level work, such as electricians. Sondermeyer's report was based on a joint CDC and California Department of Public Health investigation in August 2014. Most of the solar employees did not use respiratory masks, and authorities cited employers for prevention lapses, such as the lack of a respiratory protection program. Recommendations to employers included limiting dust exposure, increased watering of exposed areas, providing HEPA-filtered air-conditioned cabs for driver operators, and using properly approved respiratory gear. Another solar study also targeted Kochi. Researchers at California State University Bakersfield and the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health displayed a poster verifying the presence of Kochi at six proposed solar sites in Lancaster in Los Angeles County. The researchers collected soil samples and used DNA testing. Their conclusion was that the fungus was found at the sites, and it presents a potential danger to those working on constructing the solar panels, as well as the community members living in the area. That's a big concern for residents in San Diego's East County and Imperial County, where numerous solar projects are proposed, in some cases in areas known to have valley fever spores. Experts also weighed in on Spherosol, the new Kochi skin test offered by Nielsen Biosciences, a biotech company in San Diego. Spherosol was recently used to test, or risk stratify, around 36,000 inmates in the 33 men's prisons in California. Gail Sondermeyer said that of the 36,000 inmates tested, only 8%, or about 3,000 prisoners with known histories of exposure to Kochi, tested positive for the fungus. Prior estimates had shown that Spherosol would identify about 13%. According to Dr. John Galgiani, director of the Valley Fever Center for Excellence, or VFCE, in Tucson, Arizona, Spherosol by itself is not a convenient one-stop test for diagnosis. Physicians must also use blood testing and CAT scans that can detect lung nodules. Spherosol could also be used on dogs too, since valley fever also heavily victimizes canines. According to the VFCE at the University of Arizona, the disease costs Arizona dog owners at least $60 million a year, with some dogs not surviving treatment. Veterinarian Sharon Grazel studied more than 100 dogs in California, especially those on the southern coast and central valley, and found that younger dogs, those that dig, and Vizslas, greyhounds, and Dalmatians are breeds at increased risk. One of the worst outcomes of disseminated Kochi in canines is the high percentage of dogs that develop kidney problems. A UC Davis study of 156 dogs found almost two-thirds of the dogs with Kochi developed proteinuria, which ultimately leads to kidney shutdown. But science is fighting back. Mira Vista Diagnostics in Indianapolis unveiled the results of a new diagnostic tool. Although veterinarians routinely run blood tests for Kochi antigens, these can give false negatives during acute stages of valley fever or if the patient is immunocompromised, and current blood work takes several days to get results. So a quicker, more reliable method, such as the new antibody detection kit that Mira Vista offers, could potentially speed up diagnosis and treatment. Results of tests show that Kochi antibodies were detected in 87.9% of dogs infected with the fungus. And speaking of faster treatment, Viamet presented a summary of its experimental antifungal meds, which a veterinarian at the University of Arizona previously tested in mice and found superior to the current standard treatment for valley fever in both dogs and humans. In an upcoming trial, Schubitz plans to test the efficacy of Viamet products in dogs diagnosed with Kachi. At the same time, Schubitz has been busy advancing development of a canine vaccine. Studies show that the mutant strain of Kachi does not make vaccinated mice sick even when given 100 times the lethal dose. Before the vaccine can be tested in dogs, however, more laboratory studies geared to longer-term survival in mice must be carried out. All this will probably cost several million dollars, which in cost comparisons to a human vaccine is a great deal. Best of all, it would not only save hundreds of dogs, says Schubitz, but much of the science behind it can be transferred over to the development of a human vaccine.
Wildlife officers are usually recognized for their efforts to help animals, but six wildlife officers from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife have been awarded the California Medal of Valor, our state's highest honor for saving human lives. These include the crew of the patrol boat Bluefin, which responded to a call of a capsized boat off the shore of Santa Cruz. They found the overturned boat along with two surfers who had paddled out to assist the victims. The crew could see the surfers taking turns holding up four victims after already helping a fifth victim to shore. Both the surfers and the victims were nearing exhaustion and waving frantically for help in the 12-foot waves. With no real training on how to effect a rescue of that nature within the surf zone, the entire crew risked themselves to save lives. Using an inflatable skiff and heavy surf, they managed to save three of the four victims who were all in advanced stages of hypothermia in the frigid water. Another hero was Wildlife Officer Kyle Kroll, who was on patrol when he heard a 911 call over the county fire department radio. A vehicle had gone over a ledge and into the Feather River. Kroll was only 5 miles away, and the nearest other rescue personnel were 45 minutes away. Kroll found the vehicle had plunged off a steep embankment and was resting precariously on a rock in a section of river with dangerous rapids. A severely injured husband and wife were inside the vehicle. Kroll could not risk moving either passenger because the weight shift could have caused the vehicle to slip into the river and wash away. So he provided first aid, and while waiting for more help to arrive, he secured the damaged vehicle by wading into the swiftly moving river to attach a tow strap and chain from his truck to the front and rear axles of the car. Assisted by a PG&E worker, Kroll tied the strap and chain to a tree and a rock to stabilize the vehicle. Rescue personnel and California Highway Patrol officers arrived, but due to continued risk of the vehicle falling into the river, they gave Kroll another chain, and he went under the car and attached it to the axle and then to a tree. Only after securing additional straps and cables could the team work to free the victims and get them to safety. Another wildlife officer honored, Lieutenant Tony Spada, was off duty, riding his mountain bike along a slough in Madera County when a woman ran from the bushes shouting, "My baby was swept away, help me." Despite the fact that he had no rescue equipment available, not even a life jacket, Spada dove into the slough. He swam with the current some 50 to 70 yards downstream, where he found two small girls hanging onto a branch to keep from being swept under a section of the slough with dense vegetation. Spada swam to their location and took the smallest girl first, placing her arms around his neck as he swam across the slough to safety. He ran upstream and dove back in the water again to rescue the second child in the same way. Without his heroic actions, there is no doubt these two young girls would have lost their lives. The final hero honored by the governor's office is Wildlife Officer Arthur Golden, who was driving home from training near Corcoran when he spotted a pickup truck that had gone off the road and down a steep embankment. A bystander reported the victim was pinned in the vehicle and not breathing. Golden quickly checked on the driver and radioed for help at his vehicle, and then he went back down the hill to the heavily damaged vehicle. Inside, the driver was unconscious and bleeding. The truck was perched precariously on a slope and ready to slide down, potentially rolling over. Putting himself in great jeopardy, Golden reached through the smashed driver's side window to assess the victim's injuries and provide immediate medical care. While Golden was half inside the truck, it started sliding and went several inches down the hillside. Golden pulled the driver toward him to relieve the pressure on the downside truck door and stabilize the vehicle from rolling over onto both of them. Shortly after, local fire and rescue workers arrived and extracted the man from the vehicle, bringing him to safety. More than 400 wildlife officers helped to protect California's natural resources, often working alone nights and weekends, facing many exceptional challenges, as you have just heard. David Best, Chief of Law Enforcement for California's Department of Fish and Wildlife, says, "All of our officers are trained and ready to take on any challenge while working in a remote county, on a river or the ocean, or patrolling in an aircraft. The officers whose actions are being recognized represent the integrity of the entire CDFW force, and we are very proud of them. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Before the 2016 election, most California drivers could be automatically registered to vote and receive their ballot in the mail, all without having to lift a finger. Today, the Assembly Transportation Committee hears a bill to authorize the state to use the DMV database to register all drivers who are eligible to vote. And last week, the Senate Election Committee passed a bill to require counties to send mail-in ballots to all registered voters while still giving them the option of going to the polls in person. Opponents say these changes would substantially increase the chances of ballot fraud, but Trudy Schaefer with the League of Women Voters downplays the risk.
I think fraud is not, in general, the concern that many people seem to think it is. We have a lot of checks within our system as it is already, and nobody's going to allow this to go forward without making sure that there's good security in many different ways.
Also in the works is a new voter database called VoteCal that will allow poll workers to verify that people haven't already mailed in a ballot when they show up at the polls. Schaefer says another critical concern is to make sure every voter's personal information is protected.
The devil's in the detail. They're visionary plans that are going to take a lot of changes all working together to make them happen.
She notes that the goal of each of these ideas is to improve the Golden State's abysmal voter turnout. Just 42% of registered voters cast a ballot in the statewide election last November. Oregon and Colorado have already instituted similar measures, and both have seen improvements in voter participation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Diana Lindsay. My guest has many accomplishments that she shares with the San Diego region. She's co-founder and president of Sunbelt Publications, a book wholesale and publishing company specializing in outdoor and regional interest. She's also author or co-author of 11 publications, including 8 nonfiction books, 2 maps, and 1 ebook. Welcome, Diana. It's a pleasure to have you here in the studio.
Thank you for inviting me.
Diana, in addition to the accomplishments already mentioned, you serve on the board of the San Diego Museum of Natural History and as museum outreach interpreter, leading free public walks throughout San Diego. How did you get started in this area of history and botany and publishing? And for you, how does it all fit together?
Actually, it was more serendipity is what I would call it. I've never really planned anything in life. I kind of live in the moment. And as opportunities happen, I kind of take a look at them and move forward if the opportunity looks right. And so where I am today is probably a result of just that. I was always interested in bicycling as a kid growing up. I went to UCLA, looked for a bike club, but biking wasn't in.
Really?
But there was a club called the Bruin Mountaineers that did hiking.
Uh-huh.
So I joined that, learned about the outdoors, had never even hiked in the outdoors until I joined the club. And then I had a history prof that was absolutely fantastic and kind of coached me to go into history. And so I brought my love of the outdoors with history and mm-hmm. ended up doing a master's thesis on the history of Anza Borrego Desert State Park.
Wow.
And by pure chance, mm-hmm. one of the professors on my thesis committee was a friend of Richard Perrott of Copley Books. And Copley Books wanted to do a book on the Anza Borrego Desert. And unbeknownst to me, in the mail came a contract for a book. And that was my first book, unsolicited by me,
because
I was doing a thesis on the Anza Borrego State Park. And that eventually led to my working with my husband on writing a guidebook to Anza Borrego State Park, mm-hmm. which then led to my eventually becoming a representative for both Copley Books and Wilderness Press, selling not only my book, but their books, and then an offer from Copley Books to become their sales manager. And so it just kind of unfolded, mm-hmm. never was planned. It just kind of doors opened, and I walked into those doors. And then to get into my wholesale book business, it was kind of a funny situation. Helen Copley wanted to have her books into Walden Books, but at that point in time, Walden Books would not allow any vendors unless you had a Dun & Bradstreet number. And Helen Copley did not want to get a Dun & Bradstreet number because she would have to reveal all her assets. So as sales manager, I was told to go out and get a Dun & Bradstreet number so I could sell the Copley books to Walden Books. And I did, but then the IRS went after Helen Copley because she had been writing off some of her trips on the book division, and they gave her a choice of shutting down the book division or disclosing how the expenses really happened. So she shut the book division down. So there I was, no job, but I had a Dun & Bradstreet number, and I was a vendor with Walden Books. So I just began buying books and selling books to Walden's, eventually to Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Len Reggio purchased the B. Dalton stores and made them the Barnes & Noble stores, and he decided he did not want to have all the publishers dealing directly with Barnes & Noble. He had heard I was selling books from various publishers, and I got a phone call at home from Len Reggio saying, "Are you a wholesaler?" And here I am in my garage, and I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "You're our wholesaler for the San Diego region." And suddenly, I was in a position that all these major publishers had to deal with me in my garage. And so then my husband said, "You need to decide, is this a hobby or is this a job? If this is a job, go get a warehouse." So that's basically where Sunbelt Publications started. And at that point then, I kind of expanded, and I kind of rode the tide with the big chain stores who were taking over and needed to have wholesalers that were their warehouses. But then as the chain stores became more dominant in the trade, they no longer needed the wholesalers because they were having their own distribution centers. So the rest of the story has to do with riding the tide, changing with the technology, changing with how the bookstores have dealt. And, you know, here I am still in business, but I've had to kind of change what I've been doing from a wholesaler now to focusing in more on distribution and publishing. And many of those major customers I had are now gone. There's no more Walden Books. There's no more Bookstar.
Right.
A lot of these other large chains that we dealt with, they're gone. So we've had to constantly change and kind of take a look and look for new opportunities. So the idea of looking for opportunities and being alert to changes in technology and all, and riding with the flow, nothing's changed.
Being spontaneous and flexible has worked for you. It's an amazing story.
That has always worked.
Well, let's talk about two of your books, Marshall South and the Ghost Mountain Chronicles, and Ricardo Breseda, Accidental Artist.
Correct.
The first won Best Regional Book at the San Diego Book Awards and Best Book of the Year at the Outdoor Writers Association of California in 2005. Ricardo Breseda, Accidental Artist, won 7 awards in Best Regional Book, Cover Design, Biography, Art, and Travel from Forward Magazine, Independent Book Publishers Association, PubWest, Eric Hoffer Awards, to name a few. In your opinion, what is it about these two books that make them stand out?
Well, first of all, I think anyone who wants to write a book needs to check and see if there's a market for that book, if there's interest in the subject. In both cases, there was already the interest in Marshall South and his experiment in primitive living up on Ghost Mountain. There was a lot of curiosity. There were a lot of stories. People weren't really sure of what the whole story was, and everybody wanted to know. In the case of the sculptures, it was the same thing. There was these sculptures that Dennis Avery had commissioned to be placed around Borrego Valley. A lot of interest in it. People going out there to seeing them, and they wanted to know the story. So in the similarity of that, in fact, and I think in books, that if you want to select a topic to write about, is to first of all see where there is interest.
Right.
And if there is interest, then people already want to know the story. So then it's a matter of then researching the story, learning the story, and then writing the story, and then making sure you have, you know, a nice cover, a nice design, and that you're willing to go out and market the book. And I think that's the key to really having a successful book.
Now, you do nonfiction.
Personally, I do nonfiction.
Okay, so would you say this is the same for fiction?
In fiction, I think it's a little more creative process. You're kind of, you know, delving into maybe areas that have not been delved into before and trying to get into some totally new area. That's not an area that I personally deal with. I deal with things that are probably, as you said, in the nonfiction arena. So I look for topics that are already there and need the story to be told.
Well, it sounds like you've told many stories in your time. One last question. After a quarter of a century of success in the book trade and so much community involvement, what's next? I mean, what are your goals for Sunbelt Publications, and what about yourself as an author?
First of all, for Sunbelt Publications, it certainly has evolved with the times. For instance, we're no longer a huge wholesaler. You know, we're now a much smaller publisher and a distributor, and we're focused on quality books rather than a lot of books. So we're focusing in on topics that are a little more unusual, that have a market, that people want to have and hold, and so we're kind of really focused on that kind of thing. We also believe strongly in the environment and in our region, and we like to see the history and the culture and the natural history of the area preserved. So we look for books that are in that area that have value and that will tell a story and that are educational, because we strongly believe that in order to really protect something, you need to love it, and to love it, you need to know about it, and you need to be educated about it. So we're about telling the story. We want to tell the story of this region. We want to tell a story that makes people love the area. Personally, I would like to spend more time writing some more books and getting into more topics. I've got a backlist of a whole bunch of topics I would really like to work on. And then we're always looking for exceptional authors. And again, for those that are out there, you know, if they, the question might be, what are we looking for? Well, we're looking not only for somebody who has written a really good book that is about our region that would fit into the books that we're looking for. But more important than that, writing a book is only half the project. The other project is being a salesman.
Right.
You have to be able to market your book. You have to be able to go out there, talk to the public, be interviewed, not be afraid of doing that kind of thing. You can have the best book in the world, but if you don't have the ability to sell the book, it's not what we're looking for, because we know, having learned the hard way, that you really, really have to be able to sell your book, because books don't sell themselves. There's too much out there.
Right.
There's too much competition. Self-publishing, which used to have a really black mark because it was considered a vanity press, has really kind of changed over the years, and there are more and more self-published books, and people that are doing that are out there really pushing those books. So if you're self-published, if you're going with a publisher, no matter, the one key is how well can you sell that book.
Right. So the one thing in common is that the author will have to do a lot of work.
The author has to do a lot of work. There's not, I think, a publisher around, unless it's a very exceptional book, that is going to pick up a book if the author is shy and not willing to do any work to push that book.
Okay. Well, you've given some good words of advice for our authors out there. Our time is up, but thank you again for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
For more information on my guest, Sunbelt Publications, and their authors, visit the company website at www.sunbeltbooks.com. And again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The County of San Diego and the City of Poway are teaming up on an ambitious proposal to connect the region's vast network of hiking and equestrian trails and other popular outdoor attractions. The Poway City Council and the County Board of Supervisors, in separate votes last week, agreed to work together to seek grant money and other funds to buy as many as 800 acres of open space near Iron Mountain on the eastern edge of Poway. Supervisor Diane Jacob says we have a tremendous opportunity to close a crucial gap in our trail system and open up more of our beautiful backcountry to the public. The land acquisition would officially link Iron Mountain, Dos Picos Park, Mount Woodson, and Lake Poway via trails that would include a pedestrian and wildlife bridge over State Route 67. The bridge would tie together existing paths spanning the length of the county. Poway Mayor Steve Voss observes, "For decades, there's been a missing link between far-flung trails, parks, and open space. Connecting these treasures would be hailed by hikers, equestrians, and nature lovers now and for generations to come as a master stroke. The land purchase would preserve additional wildlife space in the Poway area and expand recreational opportunities for residents and visitors."
The ambitious vision includes a bridge built over Highway 67 to allow people to hike and ride all three of Poway's storied peaks, Blue Sky, Mount Woodson, with its famous potato chip rock, and Iron Mountain, all in one day without ever leaving the trail, notes Poway Councilman Jim Cunningham. The Poway City Council approved its partnership with the county on April 7th. The Board of Supervisors backed the agreement the next day. The PACT says they will pursue funding sources to purchase additional open space in the Iron Mountain vicinity. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Save the bees. That's the battle cry in two ongoing court cases in California where beekeepers and environmental groups are fighting regulators over the use of pesticides they contend harm bees and crops. On Tuesday, on behalf of the groups, the law firm Earth Justice asked a federal judge in San Francisco to make the EPA take a second look at a pesticide called sulfoxaflor. Lead attorney Greg Laurie says this is the first case beekeepers have brought against the agency for failing to protect honeybees from toxic pesticides.
It's gotten to the point where beekeepers are losing so many bees each year that they simply can't stay in business. At the rate we're going, we're really on the short path to agricultural disaster.
Last week, Earth Justice asked a state court in Alameda to force the California Department of Pesticide Regulation to stop approving the use of a class of pesticides called neonicotinoids until the department finishes a multi-year review of the impacts on honeybees. Groups opposed to and in favor of pesticide use both cite studies they say prove their respective points. Pesticide manufacturers blame the bee deaths on a combination of causes, including disease and predators. But no matter what the cause, Paul Towers of the Pesticide Action Network says the stakes are high.
We know that bees are responsible for 1 in 3 bites of food we eat. And so we need to take every step we can to ensure their continued safety and protection.
California's state review of neonicotinoids began in 2009, and Towers says that's long enough to take some meaningful action to protect bees. The bees play a beneficial role in many farm crops, but at greatest risk in California is the $3 billion almond crop, which is entirely dependent on bees for pollination. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
With Cinco de Mayo coming up, here's a safety reminder if you are planning on using Mylar balloons as part of your celebration. Mylar balloons are colorful, festive decorations. However, they can also pose a safety hazard to our electric system if they're outdoors and not securely tied down. SDG&E is urging customers to be aware of the dangers that can arise when Mylar balloons touch power lines. The metallic coating on Mylar balloons is an excellent conductor of electricity, and when a Mylar balloon comes in contact with a power line, it can cause a power outage in your neighborhood and even spark an electrical fire. SDG&E reminds all San Diego County residents to keep Mylar balloons indoors. If you see a Mylar balloon at an outdoor gathering, be sure it's securely tied down or attached to a weight. When disposing of a Mylar balloon, be sure to puncture it in several places, because a partially inflated Mylar balloon can easily become airborne again. If a Mylar balloon, kite, or any object becomes entangled in an overhead power line, please call 911 or SDG&E at 800-411-7343. Do not try to remove it yourself. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The Harley-Davidson Motor Company has announced a recall of nearly 46,000 motorcycles for model years 2014 and 2015 due to dangerous clutch problems. The clutch may fail to disengage, particularly if the motorcycle has been parked for an extended time. When the engine is running and the motorcycle's in gear, failure of the clutch to disengage can make the motorcycle move unexpectedly, potentially causing a crash. Harley-Davidson will be notifying owners about the recall. Dealers will flush out the clutch system and rebuild the clutch master cylinder free. Owners who want to learn more can contact Harley-Davidson customer service at 1-800-258-2464. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music,
Frank Nora, Kevin MacLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.